Heard about Anchor? It is the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. There are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your own phone or computer. Anchor will also distribute your podcast so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more podcast platforms. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So download the Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started today.
Hello, folks. Another Sunday come and gone of this NFL season. My co-host is going in the right direction. I am going in a very, very downward spiral. And for those of you who are wondering who my co-host for today is, the kid Big Rat 310 is back with me on episode 35 of the YWC Football Talk podcast as his team beat the doors off of the LA Rams, and my New England Patriots unfortunately had a late fumble that almost won. They were looking good, but they just couldn't get it done. As we're all actually recording right now, as the third quarter is about to begin of the Giants-Bucks game. So if you do hear any sudden cuts, it's because of that. Where so far, it's looking like a pretty interesting contest. But Big Rat, welcome back, my man.
I'm happy to be back. And in fact, the last time I was on, it was also a Giants game in primetime when they played the Eagles and Daniel Jones had his little stumble that we saw live while we were recording. It was pretty awesome.
Well, they're starting with the ball now, so who knows if we'll see that. So now I know whenever the Giants play in primetime, I'll always make sure to get you on.
It's a good way to get through watching the Giants in primetime, even if they are playing solid today.
Exactly. Exactly, but I'm gonna let you start off because you're like it's not good cop bad cop we're playing here. It's gonna be called happy cop sad cop, and I'm gonna let the happy cop take it from here and say how his Sunday went watching his team play in the NFL. That being the Miami Dolphins beating the LA Rams by I believe 28-17.
Yeah, it was a good day. I mean, it would have been a better day if because I mean for those that. I've said this a bunch of the podcast. I do kind of like root for the Pats on the side a little bit this year, but also as apparently an AFC East contender, it also would have been good for us if Buffalo took a loss there. So definitely, everyone I was with watching the Dolphins game, we were very much interested in the Pats game too. It was a good day, but you know, I mean, it was fun. The team won in a bunch of different phases. You know, all those blowhards all week who said the Dolphins made a mistake because the O-line was so horrible, Aaron Donald is too scary, you can lose the locker room making a decision like this. Well, the special teams had their best game of the year, not just because Jakeem Grant returned a punt. Matt Hawk was great all day, too. The coverage was good. The defense had a really good day as well. The defense was playing on fire. They destroyed Goff, multiple turnovers throughout the game. Like, Rams really only got it together late in the fourth quarter, as Xavier Howard, you can kind of tell, was slogging a little bit, and Robert Woods just running right by him whenever he wanted, especially for that last touchdown by the end. So, in essence, like, the whole thing about the locker room turning, you know, on Flores for what he did, I mean, there was clearly no evidence of that, and the O-line only allowed four pressures. Aaron Donald did have a sack fumble to start the day, which as a Dolphins fan was fucking miserable, not just because, you know, Tua got sacked and fumbled, but also I could just see all these jackasses, this is why you should have kept Fitzpatrick in there and all that garbage. They only allowed four pressures all day, and that's against the Rams D-line that has had a really strong season and has done a lot of really nice things. So the Rams defense, actually number one in the NFL in yards per play allowed on defense. They have some other defensive metrics that aren't so great, but they're good on a per-play basis. So I was very happy with the game. Tua did not have a big day, but it reminded me a lot of kind of like Ryan Tannehill in the Titans playoff games. It's like it was kind of, especially like that Ravens game would maybe be a good comparison. Like, it's just kind of like the flow of the game. They had built such a big lead. You know, the coaches want to be conservative with him anyways. They have double the reason to do that when you're up 28-7 or whatever it was, like really early in the game. So there was no reason to like get feisty or get testy in any way, and as a result, like, you know, I mean there was some disappointment, I guess, that it wasn't more flashy, but like, you know, I kind of understood. They were up so big, they kind of scaled down the game plan a bit, and then they just kind of let things go as they did and kind of sat on the ball, had some moments here and there, but overall I was happy with it. It was a good day. It was good to see them get a decisive win against a not bad team, because two of their three wins were against the Jaguars and the Jets, which warrant no respect. And their other win was a blowout of the Niners, which at the time looked impressive, but Jimmy G was benched at halftime. Like, he turned the ball over multiple times in the first half. The defense was kind of a mess. Like, the defense was starting Brian Allen at corner. They didn't have Emmanuel Mosley back. So, I mean, it was a nice win. I don't want to take it away from them, but it was hard to give them too much credit until we saw the Niners kind of whoop on the Patriots a little bit. That was different, but they also got starters back for that. So yeah, overall, a good day, a happy day. You know, the Dolphins are in a good spot. The team is good enough to win with Tua, even if the offense takes a step back. The defense is getting better by the week. So yeah, good day all around, no doubt.
I didn't watch any of the games. Obviously, I was watching New England versus Buffalo, but from what I gathered from some of the highlights I got to see and just from some overall analysts, it just seemed like, you know what, you're right where you said the whole Ryan Tannehill comparison, where, you know what, the defense was good. They did not just enough, but they did it so where they're not overcomplicating to us. So where it's like, you know what, hey, we're not going to make you do this. It's just, hey, we're going to take it simple, baby steps. And you know what, for a rookie quarterback, that's a very good thing. As Brady just missed. I can tell when Tom. Sorry to cut off on this. I'm just watching the game right now. Watching him for so long, I can tell when he's miserable or he's not happy, and he's been showing it since late in the second quarter.
Yeah, you can definitely get a vibe of maybe some frustration, some limitations. I mean, they're just not the same team when Godwin doesn't play. Like, he really does make that big of a difference. And yes, he's, I mean, now I'm not trying to resolve Brady. He's been bad. Like, he's just been up and down throughout the day, missing guys left and right, et cetera. Nice to see Ronald Jones is still alive. I thought he was going to be sent to the gulags after his fumble. And he got benched for the rest of the first half, but then he came back just now. So, yeah.
But, no, with you guys, honestly, and then I was looking ahead at your schedule, like, this Sunday's game is very interesting, not just because it's my an Arizona team, but it's a very interesting in the sense of it's two teams who we didn't expect a lot out of going into 2020, and also, too, for you college football nerds out there, rematch of the 2018 Orange Bowl. Except this time, it's taking place in Arizona, as opposed to last time. Was that because it was actually in Miami the last time Kyler and Tua shared a field?
My boss, believe it or not, my boss of all people, who's not an Alabama or Oklahoma fan, but he and his son were like big college football fans, and they actually went and watched Tua and Kyler that day. So, it was a fun moment.
It was, but no, that's the only thing I just wanted to gather from that game, too, was just like how I said, hey, Flores kind of took a step back and said, hey, we're going to make it easy for Tua. They're not going to make Tua overcomplicate things, as Tom's about to go for it on 4th and 2 at about the Giants' 39. Let's see, is he going to get it? Takes his time. Just run it, Tom. Oh, and he got it to, I think, Keyshawn Vaughn. Now we're going to play Sad Cop. And last week with San Francisco, obviously, it was just a pure ass-whooping, and I came on here and I vented for 10 minutes. Yesterday was kind of like, do you remember the Pete Carroll, obviously the infamous Pete Carroll incident at the Super Bowl where had Russell throw it and he threw the interception, where you just see him go, like, oh no, and he drops his headset? That was me when Cam did that, and I just kind of dropped to the floor where I was just like, we were so close, yet this just happened. I was just like, for the love of God. But you know what? I do take away some positives yesterday. Like, Jacoby Myers looked good. Damian Harris, if you get into space, our O-line looked good for the first time in a while. And Josh Uche, the rookie out of Michigan. So there were some positives to look ahead. And the only other thing I have to say, too, is our defense. There's just some pieces that I'm just like, good Lord. We're letting the same thing happen against San Francisco and Buffalo. But at the same time, too, with Buffalo, I look at them and I just argue with people. I think if they wanted to really put not just a footnote in the AFC, but in general in the league, you go out there and you stomp the Patriots. The fact that they let the Patriots stay around with them proves to me that, look, and if you look at Buffalo's upcoming schedule,
Seattle this week.
Seattle, they have a bye, and then they have, like, still to play Arizona, San Francisco, which now is kind of a bit of a thing, and then they also have Pittsburgh.
Yeah. And not to mention our games. You know, your game is
week 16.
Oh wow, nice play. Your game is in Foxborough.
Yes.
Right? Yeah, so you still have that, like, advantage. And the Dolphins game isn't in Miami. It'd be in Buffalo. They beat us down here earlier in the season when the team is very different than it is right now. But those are going to be tough games. No, those are going to be no gimmies. And that's week 16 and week 17. So
yeah,
that'll be interesting.
Yeah, so that's with me with Buffalo, where right now, and also when I look back at their schedule, it's, okay, you beat, so far, the Jets twice, which once they didn't even get a field goal on, and the Jets had them up. You beat Vegas, who Vegas is okay. The Rams are very Jekyll and Hyde, and then the Dolphins, but this is before the Dolphins kind of had a, like, sort of an identity. They're still trying to figure things out.
Yeah, and I could say, like, I don't know if I said this on the podcast or not, but if you watched, for those that didn't watch that Dolphins game very closely, the very first offensive play of the game, Byron Jones hurt his groin, and he left the field. And that's their $80 million cornerback. And if you want to hear an argument for how the Dolphins have won three in a row and why they're playing better, Byron Jones came back for that San Francisco 49ers game. And very clearly it's made a big difference on the defense. That was getting roasted in the first month of the season. The Patriots beat the shit out of the Dolphins' defense. Like, the Seahawks tore them up. The Bills tore them up. Josh Allen threw for 400 yards against us. So Byron Jones left. Noah Igbinoghene, their first-round pick at cornerback, who the Dolphins fans thought would play slot, but he's not playing slot, actually. He's the backup boundary cornerback to Byron Jones, and he played that entire Bills game when Byron Jones went out. Flores did not adjust the scheme. He gave Noah all the responsibility that he was going to give Byron Jones, which is trailing Stephon Diggs around the field, and he got lit up, and Noah got lit up against the Seahawks as well. Last week, now that Byron Jones is back, Noah doesn't even play. He only played 7 snaps on Sunday, only because Byron had to leave the game for a few snaps because he was cramping. So Noah doesn't play anymore. He's literally 20 years old. I believe he's actually the youngest player in the NFL. So, like, you know, be patient with him and all that. But him being benched for Byron Jones' return has made a big difference in the defense. So not to make the tangent too long, but to your point about the Bills, that's the Dolphins team that they put up 430 yards on and 4 touchdowns with Josh Allen. Like, that wasn't their defense like it is now. It's very, very different circumstance.
And also, too, I saw this article where McDermott was going on this thing about, this is a big win for our city, this is a big win for our club. I'm like, you got the monkey off of your back of you haven't beat New England since 2011 at home. And also, too, the one thing I loved was 4 years ago when they beat us 16-0. They're like, oh, we shut out the Patriots. And I'm like, you shut out a Jacoby Brissett led New England Patriots, and he had a broken finger, and you got a touchdown and 3 field goals. Like, congratulations.
It was his rookie year.
Yeah, it was his rookie year, too. So that was just my point as well, where I'm just like, even for them to come out and say it's a big win, all Patriots Twitter was just going like, okay, guys, like, have your big win in November. Like, as a Patriots fan, we're used to big wins in January. So for Bills fans, it's like, look at this. Don't, like, let this one settle. Like, just, you know what, embrace it for the next few days and then move on. Because if you guys go out there and lose to Seattle, like, it's going to be like Cleveland, where I remember when they lost to Pittsburgh, 4-2 looked like 2-4. And that's another team I want to talk about as well in a minute. Fucking cost me money.
The Bills, what it tells me, this doesn't help for you as a Patriots fan, I'm sure, but what it tells me, like, how important that game was to them, how tight they kind of got, you know, if they kick a field goal and they go to overtime, Bills might have fumbled that one away, you know, because the Patriots offense was playing a lot better in the second half. They were kind of picking up some momentum with each successive drive. Cam was playing better, and it's like, if you go to overtime, and this is like this incredibly important game for the Bills and not just some other game, then maybe, you know, maybe the Pats actually might have been able to pull it out. And, of course, if they had just scored a touchdown on that drive to begin with. But I can understand why it's sad. I think one thing that I think is the reason why there's obviously positive things from it is that if you guys weren't 2-4, if you were 4-2 going into that game but had all the same offensive question marks, and then you played like that, you know, I think you'd be a little more encouraged. You'd be like, okay, sure, like, we lost, but the offense started to kind of click. Cam got more comfortable than he was the last few weeks. Like, I think you would have viewed all those things as a good thing, seeing Uche come back and playing. I mean, Uche starting to play more and playing better. But because you were 2-4, and like you said all week, we need this game, we need this game, we need this game. Cam essentially said it himself. It's like, there's almost, there's almost no moral victory for you guys to enjoy because of the fact that you just can only take so many losses. And I don't think the Patriots season's over, but it's probably fair to say winning the division is probably going to be tough because you're just too many games behind the Bills right now. So that's why I think, you know.
Okay, let's just try this out again. Okay, I think we're back up and, yeah, we're back up and running. Sorry, guys, about that. Just audio problems we're having. But no, we're Big Rat and I are back up and live now. The only other way I'm going to take away from this game is that, look, there is a light at the end of the tunnel, and that light happens to be at MetLife Stadium next Monday night, so.
Yeah. Always the best thing for an NFL offense.
Yes. And also, Tom, looking at their schedule coming up, and I'm just like, okay, New York Jets should be a win.
All right, so you know what I'm going to do, actually? I am just going to record the conversation that you and I are having, so just, you know what, and then I'll figure out a way to import this, and then I'll go from there. If anything, I can just take the audios from both.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea. I've done that before when I was doing stuff with Mark Keem and Phil a few years ago, so makes sense.
All right, so anyway, guys, we're figuring out a way to make things work. Sorry, out of all the times my GarageBand decides to stop working on me, it's when I'm recording a podcast. But no, the only big things I look at when I say what everyone, I know I got called this yesterday too with me saying, oh, you just hate Buffalo. I'm like, well, yes, that part is true. The other part is true as well is too, when you look at this football team, their run defense is terrible. And Brady missed an open receiver. Their run defense isn't that good. And the fact, too, that they just kind of let New England creep back into that game. I'm just like, you had a chance to put them down. And even, too, when they were up 14-6 and we got the touchdown and then we got the 2 points, I'm like, we can win this game.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the only point I wanted to make quickly about their schedule was that we've got New York, which should be a win. Baltimore is a very interesting game because we don't know who's going to show, even though I feel like New England, that's the game New England's going to lose. But then after that, it's Texans, Cardinals, Chargers, which depending on what Cardinals team shows up, those are three potential winning games. So if we can win four out of the next five, the 9th, the 15th, the 22nd, the 29th, and the 6th. If we can win four out of our next five, we're 5-6, and then we could. Part of me is trying to think about, you know what, this team's going to do something, but at the same time, too, I'm just like, don't get your hopes up. It's just me trying to be optimistic, but I know this team's not what it used to be, but look, I can look and see some positives and the fact, too, that, hey, Buffalo's got their tough part of the schedule coming up, and New England's got the easy part of their schedule coming up, so if New England could string some wins together, who knows what can happen? And Big Red's probably looking at me right now being like, because your buddy Bobby did this to me Saturday saying that this team is bad and I didn't want to admit it, which yesterday I found to be true. But at the same time, too, that's what I love about it. Anything can happen.
I don't think they're as bad as people think, though. Like, I've been saying this all year. Like the team that almost beat the Seahawks, that beat the Raiders, that beat the Dolphins. It's like, I just don't think that team is gone. And you started to kind of see that team again on Sunday. Like, I mean, I'm with you that the Bills, like, have a lot of problems. Their 6-2 record is very misleading. And Josh Allen hasn't played that well the last four games. So I'm with you on all of that. And it's just like, I think, like, people take it too far that, like, this team, like, it wasn't surprising. I had the Pats covering yesterday, which they did, even though they didn't win. I just don't think they're as bad as people think. And I do agree. Look, you don't want to get your hopes up, so I get that. But here's the path. I think it's very straightforward. I mean, you play the Jets twice. You can beat the Bills again. Like, I understand they've won a lot. You damn near beat them in Buffalo. So I don't see why that's not possible. Then you have I believe you still have the Cardinals and Rams left on the schedule, right? So yes. Try to grab one of those, maybe not both, but, you know, Belichick, we just saw Brian Flores absolutely massacre Jared Goff, and this Patriots defense is the one that still, I said on your podcast last time, the one that held the Chiefs offense to 20 points. Like, that these, like, pass-heavy 11 personnel teams, these are the teams that the Patriots defense tends to play well against. So if you can beat the Rams but lose to the Cardinals, right? Let's say you even lose to the Ravens. All the other games that you win, If you win the Rams, Jets twice, Bills. And then I believe the other two are Dolphins and Chargers, right?
Texans and Chargers also.
Texans, Chargers, and Dolphins. Okay. Yeah. Bill Belichick has a great track record against rookie quarterbacks. We've seen this throughout his career. Yeah. Both the Dolphins and the Chargers are going to be starting rookie quarterbacks when you play them. So there's something there as well. And the Texans have their own problems. I can totally see them going 7-2 their last 9 games, only losing to the Ravens and to the Cardinals, let's say, right? And I know look, obviously those games are winnable too. I know it's interesting and all that. I just think people are exaggerating like how bad they are. Like, yes, they're not who they were, and so many people want to dance on their graves. I don't know. Like, we saw them play the Chiefs tough with no quarterback. We saw the first 3 games of the season. We saw last week. They've really only given you 2 really bad performances out of 6. Like, I don't think they're as bad as people think. And because they lost yesterday, everyone's going to write them off. But I thought it says a lot that, kind of like the Seattle game, they came very, very close to knocking off a team that everyone freaking loves right now, and it's 6-2. 3 of your 4 losses are against the Bills, Chiefs, and Seahawks.
Yeah.
The Seahawks have the 2nd-best record in the league. The Chiefs have the 3rd-best record in the league. Like, I just think it's gone too far. So, look, it's a long road. It might be tough to go. 9-7, I do think, will get you in the playoffs this year with the added playoff spot. And I understand it's tough. I understand you don't want to get your hopes up. But, you know, playing the Jets is a nice way to start it off and then see what happens from there. If you lose to the Jets, though, I think at that point, we've already written off winning the division. A loss to the Jets, it's not that a 6th loss kills you. Like, you can get a 6th loss and win out, in theory. It's just you can't trust them to win out if they lose to the Jets. That's the issue.
Good Lord, no, I can't trust them. That's why, like, next Monday I want to go in confident, being like, yeah, we're going to beat the Jets. I did that with San Francisco, and I proved me wrong. So, you know, I'm going in next Monday with, like, that anything-can-happen mentality. Like, I know it's the Jets, but you know what? You got to pump their tires just a little bit. But enough about, like, me being salty and in pain. One thing I want to say right now, and also one other point I wanted to get on me too quickly was that, and someone always uses to make fun of me, even though I will defend it, is that if the pre-COVID Cam was playing in that Kansas City game, I think New England either gets very close or wins. That's the only thing I want to say.
Yeah.
The next thing I want to mention too is probably the game of the day yesterday with the Ravens and the Steelers. Obviously, guys, we're not going to go over every single game. We're just going to pick a few here and there. But that game, man, that told me 2 things about 2 different teams. One is that I think Pittsburgh is now officially legit, not just contenders, but Super Bowl contenders. And we got some questions with this Ravens team.
Yeah. You know, it's hard to ignore. It was a bad performance. It was a very bad performance. I mean, not very bad. They just had a lot of that, but they had a lot of bad turnovers. I also don't want to get too carried away. I feel like we're connecting, you know, these losses to what happened to the Titans in the playoffs last year when everything's very different. At the end of the day, the Ravens, they comfortably destroy bad teams like no one else in the league. Like, whenever they play any of these bad teams, they're just going to win by 14. Like, they just do. Like, consistently. Like, every single week, it seems. Whether it's the Bengals or the Redskins. It's just like, you never even have to worry about it. It's just like a surefire lock that they're going to play very, very, very well. So, as a result, like, I don't want to get too carried away. But, yeah, I mean, there's issues. It'd be ignorant to ignore them. Remember, the Chiefs last year lost to the Colts and Texans in back-to-back weeks at home. Started the season 7-4. And we all know how that story turned out. So, respect.
That's where I was. I remember, too, I think I either said this to you and Phil in the AFC preview or to Matt Beast and Britton on the NFC show. But I remember saying that I could see Baltimore going through some adversity like this year and still coming out on top. I'm not writing them off. I'm just saying that, look, there are concerns there with this football team. And if you look at their upcoming schedule, it's at the Colts this Sunday, which I will say this about the Colts. They're that team where Phillip Rivers is going to, if you're a Colts fan, is going to piss you off on one play, but the next play, you're kissing his feet.
Yeah.
Like, we saw that yesterday in the Detroit game. But then after that, they have New England, which could be a potential trap game, but I still think Baltimore wins. Then the Titans.
And then they flip it around short week. There's the Thanksgiving night, just cherry on top, because we'd put through two games of probably crap in the afternoon, Pittsburgh and Baltimore rematch, but in Pittsburgh this time. So for Baltimore right now, I think at this rate, unless Pittsburgh falls off, because if you look at Pittsburgh's schedule, they got some cupcakes.
Yeah.
They have some cupcakes, so we'll see how that goes, but
I've already seen some 16-0 talk with them like that. Like Mike Florio was like, can this Pittsburgh Steelers go 16-0? It's like, wow. Time flies.
I heard that today too, where it was like, oh, if this is the one version of that I heard was, oh, if this was the Patriots, he'd be flipping it to, oh, if they're 16-0. I got to look up their schedule just to make sure like I get it all right. But like Cowboys. This week, at Dallas, yeah. First Cincy, at Jacksonville, first Baltimore, first football team, at Bills, at Bengals, versus Colts, at Browns.
Okay, I'll say the Colts, I think, are maybe the most underrated team in the league right now. Like, they're 5-2. They have a really good point differential. I forget what it is, but it's like the fifth best in the league. Like, it's something really, really high. Like, it's better than the Bucs, I think. Or, like, neck and neck with the Bucs. Because they lost to the Jaguars, and because Phil has a tendency to throw, like, really bad interceptions, people don't, like, particularly take them seriously, but they've made some damn good, they've had some damn good games. They've flat out smacked some teams this year. Like that Lions game was dominance. Like, and that's a Lions team that was 3-3, that started to get some wins, that people were starting to buy into a little bit, and they just got smacked. And the underrated thing about the Colts is they might have the best defensive line in the league. Like, the DeForest Buckner trade has made a massive, massive difference. Like, they, by most metrics, they abuse teams well on the defensive side of the ball, like pretty much every week. So, yeah, I think the Steelers could lose to the Colts. The Ravens could also lose to the Colts, by the way. And I think the Ravens are going to play better on Thanksgiving. I just don't think, like, the Ravens, I think I saw a stat that the Ravens had 200 more yards than the Steelers did in that game, but they had four turnovers. One of them was a pick six, and a few of those turnovers were in the red zone. They have problems. I don't know about you, but I wasn't that interested in Lamar in fantasy this year because it just seemed pretty obvious. Like, when you have like that, it's kind of like Cam's 2016, the year after the MVP year. When you have that super dominant season, there's a natural like regression effect, and it's hitting Lamar pretty hard right now. I think the lack of other receivers in that offense is starting to matter a little bit more, because last year when they were just so insanely dominant. And it really can't be understated. That was one of the best teams of the last 20 years. Like, I know they didn't go far in the playoffs, but they had, like, the fifth highest point differential of all time. Like, they were dominant every single week. And the running game was so insane that just having Hollywood and Mark Andrews was enough. Now, as they start to come back to earth a little bit, Mark Ingram's not giving them the same thing he did last year, and he's banged up. Like, now, when they're in these more tightly contested games, like, people say, you know, can Lamar come from behind? I mean, I don't know. Like, them and the Steelers were trading scores back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Like, they turned it over four times in the red zone. I don't think, when people say that, what they're saying is, can Lamar throw? And in essence, like, they don't mean to say that, but that's kind of what they're saying. Can he throw with the game on the line? I mean, he led the league in touchdown passes last year. So, like, I'm not just going to, just because we haven't seen it, doesn't mean it can't happen. And we haven't seen it because they're freaking blowing teams out every single week. Like it's not their fault that they're so good that they consistently destroy teams every single week. And look, that Steelers game was a back and forth coin flip kind of game. I don't think we should put too much stock into like them losing that game. They have problems. Maybe this year, if they don't have better receiver play from Miles Boykin or Snead, maybe we can call it like a fatal flaw, their ability to play from behind. But that doesn't mean like it's structural like to the rest of his career. And I guess that's what gets me hot, you know.
No, I get that. I completely get that. It's just, I think now a lot of people are going to want to see, like, for example, like how there was that cryptic tweet from Hollywood Brown that he deleted because he hasn't been that used that much. I think he was targeted two or three times yesterday. And then also, too, like, for example, like how they no longer have that three-headed monster at tight end. Because Hayden Hurst obviously got traded to the Falcons. They had one loss. You and I called this earlier in the year with them losing Marshall Yanda to retirement, saying that was a big loss. And then now the newly paid Ronnie Stanley, same thing too. He's done for the year, I believe, with not a high ankle sprain, but some sort of ankle injury that was really bad.
Yeah, it looked bad. It looked bad.
Yeah, it's just one of those things where now people are going to be questioning them, but at the same time, too, I feel like I said this, too, on this show many times. Look at all the past Super Bowl winners. 2 years ago with New England, they started off 1-2, losing to Detroit on Sunday Night Football. And everyone thought, oh, it's over, and then they went out and they start Miami the next week, and they kind of went on a roll from there. And then even, too, there's the Miracle Miami season where, you know what, they had that one loss, and they lost in Pittsburgh, and everyone's like, oh, what's this team going to do? Still won this division and still won the Super Bowl. Eagles and the underdog mentality. So for all the shit talking we're doing to the Ravens right now, look, it could be actually in the long run, it may benefit them, and it could just fuel that fire that they need to win.
Yeah.
And
remember, they are probably, I could be wrong, but I would guess that they're probably going to go 5-1 in that division. Like, they just match up so well against the Browns. Like, when Baker's like Goff, man. Like, when he has pressure in his face, like, he's just not the same guy. And that's what the Ravens do. They blitz like crazy. And they don't have OBJ anymore. And, you know, with the Bengals, like, their offense just couldn't get anything done. Like, Baltimore traditionally, similar to Belichick, they traditionally destroy rookie quarterbacks, with the exception of Kyler Murray last year, who played pretty well against them. At least ever since Harbaugh's there. So, you know, if they beat the Browns, beat the Bengals, and get their revenge on Pittsburgh on Thanksgiving, that's another 3 wins. Like, that already has them at 8-2. Like, you know, like, they can rebound. But I do agree with you, it's adversity, and we'll see how they respond to it.
Exactly. The only other game that I look at quickly yesterday is, I love everyone going, Patrick Mahomes 5-touchdown day. I'm like, it's against the Jets. Let's just simmer down.
Yeah, it doesn't count. Nothing against the Jets.
It's a cute little asterisk. The next one I want to talk about was probably the upset of the day, the Bengals going in and taking care of the Tennessee Titans. Like,
yeah.
I know you and I know a Titans fan in common, and I don't think he was exactly happy yesterday, but this Titans team, they're only I was telling this to people, like, where Pittsburgh, they have this great defense. Their offense, and Ben, is just going to do just enough to, you know what, get those wins. Tennessee's got a problem where their defense is very, very questionable. That's why they had to go out and get Desmond King today, which I'm surprised they only got a 6-4. And their offense, if there's games where that offense doesn't look good, it's not good all around. So Tennessee's another wait-and-see kind of team. But if they keep playing the way they're playing the last few weeks, like against Pittsburgh and against because only besides Buffalo, they haven't really had that many good games this year. Like I said before, all their games are one score. Like, look at the Houston game 2 weeks ago. They had to go to overtime.
Their lack of a pass rush is starting. Greg Rosenthal tweeted it, and I thought it was very on point. Their lack of a pass rush might kind of start to be a little bit of a fatal flaw. Like, Jadeveon Clowney, he's never had big sack numbers in his career, but Jadeveon Clowney will always get you a lot of hurries, a lot of pressures, a lot of quarterback hits. Even if he doesn't always finish, he's still affecting the passing game a lot. This is why teams pay so much money for him. Even though he'll never get you a 20 sack season. But he's not even doing that this year. His pressure numbers are down. His hurry numbers are down. His QB hit numbers are down. They kind of need him, like, really badly, because their lack of a pass rush, you know, the Texans dropped 35 on them. These teams score on them every single week, even early in the year. Like, the Jaguars put 30 on them. The Vikings put 31 on them. Like, everyone scores on the Titans, with the exception of the Bills in that Tuesday night game. And it's hard to win that way. And so, yeah, I like the Desmond King trade a lot. We'll see how it affects things. And if that and their pass rush gets better, they'll be okay. But right now, it's definitely an issue. And I think they would even admit, probably a little disappointing for a team that, you know, I don't think they want to go 9-7 and get into the wild card round again. You don't want to repeat. I mean, sure, they would like to get the conference championship game again, but you don't want to repeat from last year. You want to build from last year. They expect to win this division. And now with that loss and with the Colts kind of surging, it's interesting. Colts and Titans still play each other twice, by the way. So that'll be a lot of fun. Now that the Texans are kind of out of it, like, that'll be a really intriguing race for the title, because I think that Titans loss to the Bengals just made it interesting. So that'll be interesting.
And I think two of those games are in the next couple weeks, because I know one of them is next Thursday night.
Next Thursday night, yeah. And the other one's like 2 or 3 weeks later. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's going to be very interesting. I'd love to see that be like a week 17, because I feel like that would decide the division. But you know what? We're getting some good football. And the same thing, too, we had, I'm going to say, not another upset, but, like, something I didn't – this is going to be a weird stat. The Green Bay Packers are 0-7 on daylight savings time. Yeah, like, the day when the clocks go back. It's, like, 0-7. It's, like, just some bizarre stat like that. Like, the only thing I have to say about yesterday is, look, Mike Zimmer recognized immediately, and also, too, I'll give credit to Gary Kubiak. The Packers' run defense, and they're not just the run defense, their linebacking core is horrendous right now. Like, they cannot tackle. Like, Dalvin Cook looked like the Florida State Dalvin Cook that I know you probably don't have exactly fond memories of watching, but that's who, no offense, but I'm just saying, that's the Dalvin Cook we saw yesterday.
Yeah. Dalvin, I don't think I've ever said this in your pod before, Dalvin Cook, he didn't just like destroy the Miami Hurricanes for years with the Seminoles. He was known as the Miami Killer. Dalvin Cook also actually went to high school in the same football conference as my high school, and he destroyed my high school. So funny story, 2 years ago, after the Miracle in Miami game, sorry to bring it up, the Dolphins were 7-6. Yeah, you guys won the Super Bowl that year, so whatever. The Dolphins were 7-6, and the next week they played the Vikings. And it was kind of like their biggest game of the year. It's like, okay, you saved your season with the Miami Miracle. You got to beat the Vikings if you want to fight for the wild card spot in the playoffs. And Dalvin Cook ran for 200 yards and 3 touchdowns against us. And one of my friends told me, man, that guy's literally been crushing our dreams since we were in high school. And I'm like, yeah, he literally has. From high school to college to the NFL, he seems to always ruin things for us pretty consistently. So, yeah, Dalvin has very much been a personal nightmare. By the way, I had the Vikings winning that game, not just having them cover. I picked them to win outright. I just thought they were coming off a bye week. They really needed that game. Like, they were desperate to win that game. And I think a well-coached team off a bye in a must-win game, those are the coaches you trust. Like, it's kind of why I trusted Belichick to cover the spread. A well-coached team in a must-win game, division game, trust them to cover. So I thought for sure the Vikings were going to cover. And then, yeah, I thought they had a chance to win a game. I picked them to win because their defense is so bad. Everyone, in my opinion, has been overrating this Bucs team a little bit because they destroyed the Packers in a game that everybody watched. It was a borderline island game, kind of on national. It wasn't in prime time, but for those that don't remember, it was a 4 p.m. game. There were only two 4 p.m. games that day. The other one was the Dolphins and the Jets, which no one watched. So everyone was watching them destroy the Packers, and everyone was like, oh, my God, this team is so awesome. And look, they're a very good team, but I thought that game kind of inflated them a little bit because the Packers' defense is awful, god-awful, one of the worst in the league. And the Vikings with Dalvin Cook took advantage of that. Their front seven's a mess. It's worse than the Patriots. And this has kind of been a Mike Pettine thing. People have pointed this out, like, throughout his whole career, like, he tends to have these long stretches where the run defense isn't good, which was also the case with the Jets. Some Jets fans listening may remember this way back in the day. So I don't know how it gets fixed. Like, I just, unless they do some personnel stuff, I don't know. I don't know how you fix that. So we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see too. Cause like with Green Bay as well, like I was fully anticipating them getting their doors blown off against San Francisco this coming Thursday. But now with some, what I'm going to say are very potentially season-ending injuries, not only for the fan, not for fantasy, for season, for the player, but season for the team, with Garoppolo and Kittle going out. Like, those are almost death sentences for the Niners, considering, look, I know it's Jekyll and Hyde for the Rams, but unless Nick Mullins, for some reason, becomes God, I think it's Seahawks or Cardinals winning the West.
Yeah, I think that was kind of the nail in the coffin for the Niners. It's a shame. That beating that they gave the Patriots is going to look worse by the end of the season because people aren't going to remember that, you know, they were fully healthy when they – well, not fully healthy, but they had Jimmy G, they had Kittle, they had Debo when they kicked the Patriots' ass. And now they're going to be without any of those three for the next few weeks. They're probably going to lose some games, and people are going to forget that at one point they were one of the better teams in the league. I agree with you, Seahawks or Cardinals. One thing to watch, kind of interesting side note, Sean McVay is like 4-2 against the Seahawks, and one of the losses was a loss on Thursday Night Football in Seattle last year where the Rams lost by a point and Greg Zuerlein missed a 46-yard field goal to win the game. Literally, like it was like literally at the end of the fourth quarter. It's not like he missed it earlier in the game. So Sean McVay always like kind of kicks the Seahawks' ass, and they don't get pressure. And when you don't get pressure and Jared Goff can sit back and go through his reads and do his thing, like the Rams are a very different offense. So Not that I trust the Rams to win that division. I would just point that out as something to watch. If they beat the Seahawks twice this year, which I think could happen, that could maybe make it harder for the Seahawks, even though they have a great record right now. So, but yeah, I'm with you. It's pretty much Seahawks or Arizona.
I actually have a fun story about that game. I didn't watch it like all of it live because I was actually at I watched it on my phone for a bit. I was at Post Malone that night when that game happened. This is back in the day of, you know, concerts and fun.
In a galaxy far, far away.
In the galaxy, yes, literally in a galaxy far, far away, where I watched on my phone Amazon like through the Amazon Prime stuff, because that's how they have some of the games that go through there. And I remember just watching that one in between, I think, I forget who was the opener, but between the opener and Post coming out, I remember just tuning into that game and then hearing about, yeah, the mock 47-yarder. But that was also the game, I believe, where Wilson and Lockett connected for like an unbelievable touch, or Lockett had just the tip toes to get in bounds.
Yeah, that was one of the best catches of the year. Absolutely.
Yeah. The only other things I got, I'm just looking at yesterday, what I got to say is, you know, earlier I was about to talk Saints, Bears, but I got, because we got a lot, I got a lot to talk about with that one, but
sure.
With the Chargers Broncos, I have a new stat for you.
Mm-hmm.
So the Chargers have lost 49 games since 2015. How many of those do you think are one score losses or one possession losses?
Okay, I think it's 14 of the past 2 years. So since 2015, they've lost 49, you said?
Yeah.
I'm going to say 29.
38. 38, one possession loss.
And that's different coaching staffs, too. It's not, and different quarterbacks. Like, because Phil's not here this year. Oh, man. That's just
no. That's through the, I believe, who was the coach before? He was in Arizona as the OC, and then he coached LA.
Yeah, Mike McCoy.
Mike McCoy, that's it. Because yeah, and then I think he was brought back in under Anthony Lynn to be the OC, and then he was fired last year, and then Shane Steichen's been there ever. Shane Steichen's kind of taken over the play calling ever since.
I think it was McCoy play calling, then Ken Whisenhunt play calling, and then Shane Steichen.
That's what it was. It was Whisenhunt, then Shane Steichen, and then Pat Hamilton, I know, is the quarterback's coach right now, former D.C. Defenders head coach. That's just one thing all I had to say about that game was, like, look. And also, too, week 13, 425, Falcons versus Chargers.
That's going to be a battle of who can blow the lead first. And, I mean, that's just – it's just because, like, Anthony Lynn just seems like – an insanely nice man, like in all the interviews he gives. And like, it's always heart wrenching for me when you watch these Chargers games and you see him on the sideline with that look on his face, like late in the fourth quarter, like, oh no, we did it again. And I'm just like, I feel so terrible every single time they pan to him on the camera. But this is tough because I don't know, man. Is it systemic? Like, because, and happen change the coach, it still happens. I mean, change the quarterback. Remember, everyone blamed Phillip Rivers. Everyone said Rivers is too turnover prone late in games, and that's what invites these close games. That's what people said. And now you have a rookie quarterback, and it keeps happening. So, just like, how does this get fixed? Like, I don't know. That was pathetic. Like that was maybe their worst loss this year. Like Badgley missing the field goal was not as bad as this. This was 24-3. Like a DPI in the end zone at the buzzer. Like just ridiculous.
Yeah. I was always saying, people always go, oh, the Chargers should have won a Super Bowl back in like 2005, 2006 when they had a great team. I'm like, yeah, but there was one team the Chargers could not beat. That's the New England Patriots. Like, I remember that the 2006 divisional round this was the year LA was like hot shit. They were the best team. I think Patriots were the 3 or 4 that year. Going to San Diego and just, oh damn, another interception for Jones.
Yeah, he just did something very, 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 very bad.
Yeah, no, I think I'm just behind, but like, yeah, he's like trailing and stuff. I don't know why he just don't go down and take the sack.
Or throw it away. Like, why this?
Oof. Yeah, like.
He was asking for it.
Yeah, pretty much. The next game is one. So that's all I'd say pretty much about that. Pardon me?
I said he might be touched down. I don't know. Because he gained a few yards after the catch. But yeah. It's still an interception. Just maybe they take away some yards on the return.
Yeah, exactly. The next game I want to talk about is just the Bears and the Saints. Besides one of the dumbest incidents, not even plays, incidents to happen this year, the only thing I got to say quickly, too, about the Chargers-Broncos game is I think that Lynn's going to probably get fired at the end of the year.
Probably. It seems that way.
It's just going to be on the – yeah, it seems that way. The only thing I would say quickly is, though, do not make Shane Steichen your head coach. I think he's better off being an OC. Yeah. And also to Denver, I think – even though he's looked good in moments, I think if they want to be serious and improve their offense, you've got to get an offensive-minded head coach in there. I think for as good as – not even good. For as respected as Vic Fangio is, he's a good defensive coach. I don't think he's a good head coach.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's – some people are just better suited in that role. Like, that's kind of why I was talking to Danny, I think, about this on Twitter the other day. That's why I don't like all this hype for Todd Bowles. Like, and look, maybe when you're not head coach of the Jets, life is just easier. Certainly it was easier for Adam Gase. Maybe things are better. But what if he's just a great defensive coordinator, but he's just not suited to be a head coach? Like, what's wrong with that? Like, that's, like, when these guys, like, I believe in giving fired head coaches second chances. Most head coaches in the NFL win a Super Bowl on their second team, not their first. So I'm totally okay with that. But some guys are also just better suited in certain roles. That doesn't mean they're less smart or anything. It's just a different skill set. Maybe Todd Bowles is just better suited to call defensive plays and not have to worry about managing a game and managing a whole roster. Maybe Vic Fangio is the same way. So we'll see.
Even to Bruce Arians was saying, like, apparently he's like, oh, I want both my guys to get head coaching jobs. I'm like, Byron Leftwich also is not an NFL head coach. And even to, like, for all the praise he's getting as an OC, I'm like, he just got handed the keys to a Ferrari. I'm like, when you have those weapons, you're going to be a good offensive coordinator. Like, I'm not hating on Tampa or anything, and it's not like jealousy thing. I'm just saying, like, look, Brady's going to make him look good. Like, we kind of saw with McDaniels, because McDaniels is making some very, very interesting play calls yesterday, like this season. But back on track to the Bears thing. For everyone saying that it's going to be, Seattle-Tampa for their the NFC Championship, I'm like, man, New Orleans, I think, is right in that conversation.
I was going to say, and I mean, New Orleans beat the Bears. The Bucs couldn't beat the Bears. So that's something to monitor. And yeah, I mean, I think New Orleans, I don't know why. Like, people are like mad at them because they're like mad at Drew Brees for like having a weak arm nowadays and all this and that. They're 5-2, having essentially not had Michael Thomas the entire season, having not had Manny Sanders the last 2 weeks. And it's like, no one cares. Like, look, we'll see if MT comes back. But, like, I just think they should get a little bit more credit than they're getting, personally. Like, they have consistency. They know that division very well. They have a lot of continuity. Everyone kind of knows their role. Like, right now the Bucs are about to bring in AB, which could be great. I'm not denying that. It has risks. It has on-field risks, too. Like, just kind of disturbing the chemistry they got going on. So, we'll see. I wouldn't rule the Bucks. I wouldn't rule the Saints out just yet. Not by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, Lord, if the Saints win this weekend, they play the Bucks on Sunday Night Football. I mean,
yeah,
it'll be really hard for the Bucks to win the division if that happens. Not saying it will happen, but it will be very, very hard.
I was thinking this today. I think this game this coming Sunday is more of a must-win for Tampa than it is New Orleans, because New Orleans won the first game.
Absolutely. Absolutely. If Tampa Bay gets swept by the Saints, like, it's going to be impossible to catch up to the Saints, because the Saints, not impossible, but borderline impossible, because who else is going to beat the Saints in the division? Like, unless the Panthers can beat them, I guess, in Carolina, it's going to be hard to catch up when you have two division losses, and if the Saints go undefeated in the division. So, yeah, they need it.
The Bucs need it more than them, and also do with the Bucs. For Super Bowl aspirations, week 12,
mm-hmm.
A little team called the Kansas City Chiefs roll into Tampa, and if the Bucs look the way they did tonight against the Giants, if they look this way against the Chiefs, Like, that's my measuring stick for if the Bucs are a Super Bowl contender, because that could be a potential Super Bowl matchup. And I know everyone would love to see Brady and Mahomes in the Super Bowl, but like I said before, if the Bucs lose to the Chiefs or look bad against Kansas City in a few weeks, that's going to go a long way for their Super Bowl aspirations, just in the sense of no one's going to think they can win if, like, look, if you play them in the regular season, they get killed.
Yeah, and I think furthermore, with the Bucs, you have to see how Brady holds up in December, because you saw this firsthand as a Patriots fan last year. Part of the reason the team started to crumble, I mean, a big part of it was the defense got worse, and that obviously they were counting on. They needed the defense to be like 85 Bears level to win all those games. The defense got worse. There were some injuries that hurt, but Brady's performance also started to drop a little bit in the month of December last year. You know, like these older quarterbacks, as the elements pick up, as he takes more hits too, because that's the thing. Like, he's in his 40s. Like, this, it's not specific to him. This also happens to Drew Brees, by the way. Like, Drew Brees in the playoffs the last few years hasn't really been the same guy. So that's what we need to see if he holds up physically. And like Peyton Manning people think Peyton Manning started to collapse in 2015. He actually didn't. He actually started to collapse in December of 2014, the year before. He started out the year great, and then the last few weeks of the season, he wasn't holding up physically as well as he had in the past. So that's going to be a key to their fate, because as great as their defense is, I fully believe this in the NFL this year, like, even the best defenses can just give up 30 points to the Chiefs. Like, it's just, or any of these teams, it's a pass league. Like, you have to, if your defense holds them to 25, you got to call that a good day, especially against playoff teams. So yeah, we'll see how the Bucks schedule lines up, and not to mention as they finish this game, but also other games moving forward.
Exactly, because this game tonight, like, even too, I heard on a, that's actually a very, the podcast I've talked about before on the show, it's from Barstool Sports, it's called The Dime Package. It's two of their female employees who do the podcast, and they were saying about this game tonight, everyone thought the Bucs were just going to beat the doors off the Giants, and I was just saying, I'm like, the same thing as you, where I think the Giants cover the spread but still lose, but as of now, it's 9 minutes and 14 seconds left in the fourth quarter, and the Giants are up 2, so if the Giants win this game, like, they're still in the conversation in their division.
And even if they don't, which just shows how bad the NFC East is, of course. But it's like, even if the Bucs escape with a win, I think we have to add to our portfolio on the Bucs. You needed to escape with a win against the 1-6 Giants. Like, if you're, I mean, the Chiefs wouldn't do this. The Chiefs would, they'd be up by 2 touchdowns right now. Seahawks probably as well. So if you want to be in that class, you know, it's important to show, even in the games you win, like, style points, you know, if you want us to evaluate you moving forward. I understand all the wins count the same. A win's a win. I don't disagree with any of that. But, you know, if you're struggling to put away a very bad team, it does make us think less of you a little bit. When the competition level raises, how are you going to play? Like, it's easy to beat up on 2 of the 3 worst defenses in the league, like you have the last 2 weeks. Can you do it against, you know, a top defense? And this obviously is not a top defense, but it's a solid defense, better defense than people think. So,
yeah, well, for sure. And the only other thing, one game we forgot to mention, there's 2 actually that I think off the top of my head right now, because if I forgot one, I'm sorry. It's just there's a lot of games, obviously. Las Vegas, Cleveland. I honestly think Baker Mayfield's just not.
Yeah,
it's not there.
The problem is he's got a ceiling, and like he looks very Jared Goff, Kirk Cousins right now. Where if there's no pass rush and he has all day to throw, yeah, he can throw 5 touchdowns against the Bengals, but you know, getting his face a bit. He's not the same guy. And it's his 3rd year in the league, you know? Like, the standards should kind of be raised a little bit. Like, I think, you never know. Maybe there's more that can happen, you know, in the coming weeks. But, and look, Kirk Cousins, like, for all his limitations, you know, you could still win a lot of games with the Kirk Cousins But it does make me wonder about his long-term viability. And like, if you're the Chiefs, like, what do? Like, are you happy with that? Are you satisfied with that level? Because it is better than any other quarterback you've had, like, over the last 20 years. But is it good enough to win a Super Bowl? And the answer is probably no, as of now.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, even too, Vegas is that team right now where, like, as the Buccaneers and Mike Evans just scores a touchdown, Vegas is another one of those teams where I feel like they're going to be in the hunt, but I feel like they're just going to be on the outside looking in.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, too, Cleveland, it's just like you have to pick up on, oh, I don't know, there's, what was I going to say? Baker's option, they either have to pay him for the next year, like next few years, or they just cut their losses and let him go, which, you know what, if you miss the playoffs, I think it's cut him and let him go.
With Baker?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they might do that Trubisky thing where like he's not cut, but they don't pick up his fifth year option and they bring in someone else to compete with him and all that, which is just going to make things awkward and unnecessary for the season, for the rest of the year. There's still a lot of season left, you know. He just seems kind of like a Goldilocks quarterback. It's like the offensive line has to be great. The run game has to be great. The receivers have to be very good for him to thrive. And that's just not realistic in today's NFL. Unless you're the Bucs, who have all that right now. But it's just not realistic that you're going to get all three. And that's a lot to ask for of a roster. You're essentially telling your starting roster every year, never get hurt. And like, it's just not realistic. So, yeah, I mean, if I had to pick, I would probably say let him go. But they might get emotional. They might think – they might give him another chance. They might think, oh, well, look at all the other quarterbacks we've had here. Like, this is the best we got. We'll see.
It's a wait and see with Cleveland, honestly. And the only other game left to talk about really is Sunday Night Football, where I barely paid attention to this game. Like, Ben DiNucci threw, and I think had more yards thrown than Carson Wentz, which I had Bobby here on Saturday, and he was saying basically, like, oh, if Philly loses this game, you can have me back on here, and I'm going to fucking just lay into Howie Roseman and Doug Peterson. But this is another win, like, with the Bucs tonight, where the Bucs should handle the Cowboys, like, the Bucs should have handled the Giants. The Eagles essentially should have beat the Cowboys. I know they covered their impossible spread, but for a while there it was, who in God's green earth? My friend actually messaged me this last night. He said, how on God's green earth were the Eagles an 11.5-point favorite over the Cowboys?
Yeah. And they got lucky with that touchdown that they shouldn't have gotten, you know, towards the end of the game. So here's the thing with the Eagles. Like, my thing is, They look bad, like, obviously. They just do. All their wins are against the NFC East and the Niners with Nick Mullins. And they had to fight to get that Giants win. They had to fight for most of the game to get this Cowboys win. My thing is, Dallas Goedert being back and them still being, and Jason Peters was also back, and them still being bad is definitely, and Jalen Reagor too, that's definitely concerning. What happens when Miles Sanders comes back, you know? Like, he'll be back in 2 weeks after their bye week. I think for them, because their division is so bad, just pick up the wins where you can. It's okay if you look bad for now, even though it does not say a lot about their ability to compete in the playoffs. Just hope you're playing better by the end of the season. Hope that all these wins that you eke out now can kind of help you down the stretch of the season. So that's what I would say.
Yeah, exactly. Because, like, the Eagles, it's like a wait and see now, because, like, I think after the bye, their next game is against the Giants. So we'll see how they do in that game. They still have to play the Cowboys. They still have to play. Like, there's all these teams they still have to play, so we'll see how they go. But I honestly don't know what to make of the Eagles. Like, they're that team where it's like 1 week, it's like, hey, they may, like you said, they're going to look bad. But two, they beat the Niners because of Nick Mullins. They beat the Giants because they had to fight for it, and luckily the Giants had, like, plays like the Evan Ingram drop and the Daniel Jones. Just, I know, I think they got a touchdown on that drive, but, like, that run, like, imagine if he doesn't get that run and that doesn't get turned into a meme. Philly's just a very interesting team, and then Dallas too. I don't say this often, but I honestly, and I'm starting to think this, I think you got to get rid of Mike McCarthy if you guys finish like horribly. You have to get rid of him. And also, too, I'm starting to preach down to this choir. You need a legitimate football guy to run your day-to-day ops as general manager. I honestly, it won't happen because Jerry Jones is the biggest fucking ego in the league. You can't let your ownership be your management. You can't in an NFL team. If you want to win, you have to get in there because Jerry's going to keep his guys. Like, why do you think Romo was quarterback for so long? Why do you think Jason Garrett was head coach for so long? Like, if I'm Dak for next year and they're not going to offer him a long-term extension, I think Dak, there's a good chance Dak may be in a different uniform come 2021.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on the one and done thing with McCarthy, and I know it seems harsh, and I usually never like think this way, but it's just like, I don't know, like the team is just lifeless, and I know Dak got hurt. They were losing games when Dak was healthy, for one. For two, there's just like structural problems. You got guys in the locker room like leaking to the media that they're upset with the play calling, like. It just seems like there's a lot of like really bad vibes going on right now. I'm never a one and done kind of guy. I'm usually always especially for a new head coach, you need to give them more time. You need to let them evaluate their program. You need to let them build the roster the way they want to build it. You need to let them do all these things. But this just seems like one of those edge cases where it's like, I don't know. Like there's just a lot of bad stuff going around with this team where it's kind of like, maybe this is different. So I'm with you, and I'm the Jerry Jones thing. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty straightforward.
It literally is. I think that wraps it up for today. All I got to say, man, it's always fun talking football to you whenever I want. I got to get an episode sometime if it can work out with like you, Bobby, and Danny, like the four of us in here. Cause I feel like that would be just the best.
We could talk about Nick Foles. Did Bobby say anything about Nick Foles? Did he like Nick Foles?
He did.
Okay.
I told him it off camera. I said, someone said it. And right away, as soon as he heard it, he knew exactly who had said the whole Nick Foles stuff. And then he said, I don't know exactly where it is in the episode, but he did mention something briefly about, he did name drop you just because he knows about the whole Nick, like the whole, obviously, your hatred towards Nick Foles. And he said about the Twitter convo stuff, so that's how you guys get into it. The only thing I'm looking at this game right now, too, and also I want to apologize for everyone in advance because they keep showing ads for next Monday night's game. Patriots at Jets. I'm just like, going into the year, I'm like, okay, I get why this is Monday night football, but right now I'm just like, I was looking at the Monday night football schedule, actually, too, to be honest. Like, going forward, it does not look that good. Like, after Patriots, Jets, it's the Vikings, Bears. And then Rams, Bucks. And then Seahawks, Eagles. So,
yeah, the better games are on Sunday night down the stretch. Even Patriots Bills, which at the time when the schedule was released was supposed to be such a landmark game, and now it's kind of like, we'll see. By the way, I just want to get my shots in on Bobby because I don't know. Sure, he didn't have the courage to say this on the podcast. Bobby and Dante taunted me for a long time. About Tannehill. For those that don't know, the fight was that I've always thought Ryan Tannehill was better than Nick Foles. And I said it even after Nick Foles won the Super Bowl. And they were like, just not, absolutely not having it. They were like, what's wrong with you? Nick Foles just won a Super Bowl. That, my friends, is the exact problem with NFL quarterback analysis across the league. Because he won the Super Bowl, he must be better than Tannehill. It was dumb then. It is dumb now. And I love rubbing that in their face. So, that's all.
Well, anyway, guys, we're ending on that note. I have nothing else to say. I'm letting Big Rat go out on his high horse. Why? Because he's one of the best co-hosts that comes on this show. Thank you once again. Because, man, you and I, we talk all, like, we talk sometimes on Twitter, but, like, man, talking football like this is just always makes the day better and makes analyzing the games better. So for that, my friend, thank you very much.
Thank you. It was fun, like it always is. It was a nice back and forth. And thanks. It was a great time. Happy to be on.
No problem, guys. Well, anyway, guys, you guys have a good night. If you're listening to this prior to the 3rd of November, which we're recording on the 2nd, but if you haven't yet done, I'm not American, but if you haven't, so I'm just going to say this, go vote. I'm not big into politics, but you know what? I'm using my platform to make sure people get their vote out. That's all.
Yeah, definitely. No matter what your political leaning is, vote. Everyone should vote. So, yeah, I'll leave it at that.
Okay. Well, anyway, guys, we'll see you guys for week 9 of the NFL season. But for now, good night, everyone.
Do, did, will, the Story of People podcast is now available on the Crier Media Network. The first 5 episodes are here and feature some incredible guests that fit into one or all 3 of those categories. Ready? Tara Sloan from the San Jose Sharks, Undercurrent podcast at NBC Sports. Marianne Iveson from Iveson Voice and the Let's Take This Outside podcast to talk about the world of outdoors as well as voiceover land. Ariana Hunsicker, future Canadian Paralympic swimmer, already winning tons of awards for this country. Scott McGregor from the Hot Wallet podcast to dumb down the world of crypto, Bitcoin, and NFTs so you don't have to. And Jackie Holowaty from Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle, Washington, the first net zero carbon certified arena on the planet. Wherever you get your pods, wherever you watch your pods, and on the Crier Media Network.
I'm Jeff Woods, and I'm shining a light on music and the rock stars who make it.
He just was one of those people. He stood out.
He was a magic guy. He really was a magic guy. We all have force. He had the same amount of force as we all have.
This was before Led Zeppelin. Robert was full on. I mean, he was Led Zeppelin without the band behind him. He had the hair, the jeans, the whole thing, you know. And he was amazing.
The Records and Rockstars podcast, heard around the world and yours to hear wherever you get podcasts. All the episodes from JeffWoodsRadio.com.